All right, well, let's just finish out. We'll take 3 minutes and talk a little bit about APL, just because I like talking about it. And I think your case, I wanted to ask you about your case. There's a couple of things about it that look interesting. Your 24-year-old Costa Rican immigrant lady.
The reason I mention that is because there's a higher incidence of APL in Hispanic patients. And interestingly, there's a tremendously high incidence in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica, wow.
Yeah, well, the reason I know that is that I have a friend who's a hematologist in Costa Rica, and they see large number of cases. And
wow,
this patient is actually a Costa Rican woman who immigrated to the United States as a teenager.
Wow.
And so it's kind of interesting.
I've heard people say that these Hispanic women who get APL tend to be obese.
Well, overall, it's not just the women. There is a correlation in APL with obesity.
So in general, APL is correlated with obesity?
It's interesting. There seems to be a higher incidence. Now, this particular patient is not the least bit obese. But there are data published, and I think others have observed it, that obesity and APL are somehow correlated.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm always interested about how the stories start and how the people get diagnosed. What happened with her?
She actually is a graduate student at the University of Chicago, and she was noticing, she was feeling more fatigued, and interestingly did start noticing bruising, very high frequency of bad bruises, and she showed up in the student care, and they looked at her. I think the first time she came, I'm not even sure they drew her blood, but the second time she came back, like a day later, they drew her blood and they noticed the abnormal counts and quickly called us about her. So fortunately, she was diagnosed without too much delay, because I think that's probably the biggest issue to discuss in APL.
Right. That always is interesting. So usually I hear that you were called on a Friday night.
This was probably not on a Friday night, but yes, that's the leukemia doctor's story. But it does seem to be, of course, there are medical emergencies, because people can die very quickly with this disease. And that's really the biggest challenge right now, is sort of educating the emergency room doctors about the possibility of this disease, because when a patient presents with cytopenias and potential DIC, you have to think about acute promyelocytic leukemia.
Do we have any numbers, at least in the United States, in terms of, let's say, total number of patients diagnosed per year, but total number of early, maybe preventable deaths? Any guess what that is?
No, I don't know the number. You know, it's such a rare disease, but I suspect that that's the big problem with this disease now, that people are waiting. It's often a disease seen if you're a younger person, you're not particularly attuned to the fact that anybody who would think that you have an acute leukemia if you're not feeling great. And so I'm afraid that a lot of these people come and they're right at the cusp of having a major catastrophic bleed or thrombotic event.
And this lady, you say, was in mild DIC at diagnosis.
She was, and she actually had a little bit in the way of retinal hemorrhage going on. She had some vision changes, and so the key there is, once the diagnosis is made, or even if you suspect the diagnosis, which actually with a circulating blast, you can see the classic hour rods, but also the immunophenotype of APL is kind of unique, not totally unique, but it can help you along the road to diagnosis, and also the quick turnaround of FISH or PCR testing to make that diagnosis. But if you suspect it, there's really no harm in getting a retinoid started immediately, and that's what we always advise.
So what happened? You gave her Atra?
Yes, we gave her Atra immediately.
And what happened to her DIC?
It starts to resolve almost immediately. Literally within days, even within 24 hours, it starts to improve. And within days, it's usually gone.
What was her white count?
Her white count was not high. She was not a high-risk patient. It was about 8,000, if I recall. We have seen a number of patients with high white count APL, and the approach to those patients is still not quite clear whether they should be treated the same as a low-risk patient or whether they need additional chemotherapy.
Are you generally giving them chemo?
We are generally giving them maybe a little chemo during induction to control the proliferative nature of the disease, a couple days of an anthracycline, idarubicin or daunorubicin. But otherwise, we treat them the same.
Getting back to the issue of upfront diagnosis, to what extent is the lack of availability ATRA to emergency rooms an issue?
Yeah, it's a problem. In fact, we sometimes get patients who are sent to us, and then again, there's that big delay, hours delay or half a day delay, because their hospital or their emergency room does not have ATRA. And it's certainly a very expensive drug for a very rare disease. So you can sort of understand why places don't have it in their formulary.
Although I've heard that, I think there's some southern network of hospitals or something that they somehow have kind of an emergency system to get people ATRA.
Yeah, anything? I think there are such systems and it makes some sense. I mean, it's so appropriate. And I'm sure that there are those mechanisms in place where you can get an emergency supply sent quickly, but you have to have the idea that this might be the problem, because another 12 hours can make a life or death difference.
So this lady ended up on the Lococo regimen?
She did. That's been our sort of standard over the last number of years now, and she's gotten absolutely no chemotherapy in the standard sense, only ATRA and arsenic. And she's done extraordinarily well. It's a little bit of a pain in the neck to treat for these patients because they have to come daily for the arsenic during their pulses of arsenic. And the interesting thing is that other countries, including this friend of mine in Costa Rica, are exploring the use of oral arsenic, which has not been very well developed here. And that would make a big difference in terms of ease of administration and probably cost.
That's interesting. I never heard that.
Yeah. You can actually take the IV arsenic and turn it into an oral preparation and
wow,
flavor it. That's what this friend of mine in Costa Rica, it's very innovative.
You take the IV stuff and drink it?
Essentially, yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
they reformulate it.
Maybe make a smoothie or something.
Yeah, well, he has a number. He has like coconut, he has lemon, he has all these different flavors. He's actually presenting the data at a meeting next month in Houston.
Wow.
Yeah, and the Chinese have done it for a long time. So,
huh.
Yeah.